This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. Sports royalty is on the air. This is the only show with so much talent and expert analysis, it can barely be contained. Jump on now or it'll pass you by. This is Place to Be Nation's Sports Evolution.
Place to Be Nation. Damn right we're back. Your home for everything sports, and I mean everything. Place to Be Nation's Sports Evolution. I'm your co-host, Scott Criscolo. As always, we've got an awesome show because we have awesome talent. And it is a big week in sports because it technically started Tuesday night, and there's actually a game going on at the moment. Major League Baseball's postseason is in full swing, and we are going to talk about that this evening. And, of course, we'll also talk about the National Football League, week four in the books, week five ahead. Big matchup in Cincinnati Sunday. We'll talk about that. What was a big matchup in July down in Dallas has now become nothing more than a scrimmage. But we'll talk about that as well. But it's kind of like when Kentucky goes to like a small school to play a college basketball game and they get all the money even though they win by 100 points. That's kind of how that game's going to go. But we'll talk about that in our next segment. We are going to talk about the Major League Baseball postseason. Before we do that, let me bring in those joining me tonight. The doctor will be joining us shortly. He is. Everyone thinks he's, you know, forlorn after what happened in the Bronx on Tuesday, but he is willing to talk. He actually was not overly upset because the doctor is a smart man, and he kind of knew what could lie ahead and what lied ahead happened. So we'll talk about that. But let me bring in. First off, he was off last week. He was doing his best up in the woods, calling some five-set games, matches. Girls yelling at him, him yelling back. Cowboy Senior. Hey. Did you get an argument with any of these? Did any of them ever get in your face and jaw jack with you or no?
No. It's an easy sport to control because we have these cards in our pocket and
right.
Like you soccer. Just pull a card out and the argument ends. So yeah. It's a beautiful thing.
Good. It's good to have you back this week, Senior.
I'm so damn good at it that they have no reason to argue.
That's what I wanted to hear.
and modest. Very
yes,
modest.
You know what that. You know what that voice is.
Humility is my greatest quality.
Exactly, and of course you've heard the other voice, the cowboy, Roger Morissette.
What's happening?
Oh, good to have you back, and good, of course, to have Senior back. We had a great show last week, Senior. We missed you. Had our man Rob Carpenter on last week.
And I listened, and it was outstanding. Rob was super as usual.
Yes, he was. We'll have him back in a few weeks. He talked about the Jets, and they actually won. Amongst plates of buffalo chicken hash. We'll talk about the Jets in our next segment. Last week, as we've been talking about every week here in the early stages here of the sports evolution, we were incorporating the awesome analysts from the two incarnations that created this show, of course, the Sports Lounge and the Extra Point. Last week, we had a Sports Lounge alum, the great Rob Carpenter. This week, an Extra Point alum joins us, and one of my favorites ever, because as mentioned, the postseason began in earnest at Yankee Stadium on Tuesday night. Tonight, a war going on at PNC Park in Pittsburgh, although it may not be a war too much longer. And then, of course, Thursday, the division series begins. So, of course, if we are talking baseball here on the Sports Evolution, we have to have the great Joel Barnhart.
Thank you. How are you guys doing?
It is a pleasure for you to join the powerhouse.
Yes, I'm excited to be here. I'm excited to be the Bautista to your Triple H.
You are the animal.
Well, actually, I was saying that because I no longer care about wrestling, but well, whatever.
Well, that was a strong statement, Joel.
You're talking to a big Bautista
fan. Leave it at that.
And speaking of evolution and the Four Horsemen, the Ric Flair has just walked into the room, and that is, of course, the Doctor. Dr. G. George Bellino. I had said in the open, Doctor, that you were slightly forlorn, but you're not in the dumps, and you didn't throw the TV out the window last night. Because
I expected it. So
Let's talk about that first. Dallas Keuchel, who had a great year, but everyone thought was a little shaky on the road. It seemed like the only stadium outside of the juice that he actually pitched well in was Yankee Stadium. Maybe he could sign him in an offseason about 5 years from now. But obviously, he did what he does best. Three hits over six. Yankees lose 3-0. Astros move on to play Kansas City. Quickly, Doctor. The 2015 season obviously had its ups and downs. Before we get to the negatives, because there obviously were a few, what positives as a Yankee fan did you gain from 2015?
Well, first of all, I didn't expect them to make the playoffs. So as we know from our preview show that we did on the Extra Point, but I like that they got some of the young guys up. Greg Bird, Luis Severino, Rob Refsnyder. I think it was great. They got a little taste of what New York's like, a little taste of the majors. So that I liked seeing this year. Obviously the middle of the year, you know, when May and June, they were hot. I mean, they were just like, they seemed like they were unstoppable at one point. I guess that's probably the only positives, really, that I could see at this point. I mean, Teixeira had a bounce-back year, but then he got hurt. And, again, that was the whole key thing, trying to keep guys like him healthy. I guess you could say A-Rod had a really big bounce-back year. But, unfortunately, age caught up, and you started seeing everyone slow down. McCann had a good year this year. He's a catcher. Catchers always wear down at the end of the season. So I'm not too upset with that. Carlos Beltran had a nice comeback season. This year, I mean, he basically carried the team the last probably month and a half. But the negatives are you can keep that pitching staff healthy. Pineda and Nova, it's like, you know, they look lights out one game and then they'll give up 7-8 runs the next game. Nova, I'll give a pass to because he had major surgery and he was coming back this year. Sometimes it takes a season to get back under your belt to get back to regular form. Pineda, I don't know. I thought he was ready to be the ace of the staff. He still has great stuff. I wouldn't give up on him, but I don't know if he's going to be the ace. And Tanaka, you're just worried about, you know, when finally he's going to have the Tommy John surgery. And he gives up too many home runs. Mm-hmm. Sabathia, horrible beginning of the season, but last five starts, 2.17 ERA. Looked a little better. I mean, you're happy if you get 5-6 innings, you know, him giving up one or two runs, you take that in a heartbeat. But, you know, obviously he had his issue the other day. I respect him for what he did and, you know, he as a person. So he had to take on that problem. But it's weird because it seems to be more negative than positive after a team that made the playoffs. I wasn't expected to make the playoffs, even though you have the high salary. I don't even go by all that anymore because these contracts that these guys were getting at one point were so much money that you can't judge by the whole payroll thing anymore. But it's bittersweet. I'm not going to say it's not, but I'm not surprised. But what I saw last night, I didn't really have much hope there. And I think you saw a lot of Yankee fans very tentative about this game last night. Now, the stadium seemed to be pretty rocking in the beginning of the game. Towards the end of the game, people were very frustrated. And you know what? Brett Gardner, those guys deserve to be booed. I'm sorry. You pay that kind of money. You live in New York and you pay that kind of money. Joel, I know you're from the Midwest, and, you know, obviously things don't cost like what it costs here. In New York, they want to boo somebody. As long as you don't start talking about their mother or throwing batteries at them or something like that, I have no problems. Boo them. They deserve to be booed because they look so – I'm not saying – I would never challenge an athlete's saying that they weren't trying or anything. That's definitely not the case. They did look lifeless, but I don't think it was from lack of trying. I just think they were worn out and they were just – beaten by a better team that night. So it is what it is.
What do you – oh, go ahead, Senior.
I think it's a different than other sports in baseball when you see a team looking flat and lifeless. I think when you're getting dominated by a really good pitcher who's on and all you're doing is taking right turns into the dugout, it's hard to look full of life. So you say they looked flat, but that's a hard thing to say about a baseball team. I just want to make a couple of points from afar. From being a fan of the enemy, sometimes you see things as a fan. One thing that really caught my interest last night was that they didn't play Jacoby, which all the money they're paying him, and you're in a one-game playoff. He's supposed to be one of the marquee guys on your team, and he's not even in the lineup. That seemed strange to me.
Well, I got to give Joe Girardi credit for doing what he did, because Jacoby Ellsbury has been horrible the last month. Not only that, but, you know, Chris Young had a great average against, and I don't remember what it was, but I know he had like 3 or 4 home runs against Keuchel. You had to, you know, it's a big game. You had to go with the hot hand. I don't really have a problem with that, but is that going to affect the chemistry of the team? Is, you know, Ellsbury said all the right things and did all the right things, but, you know, it's obviously got to be burning him. You know, as a Red Sox fan, you know, he's a gamer, and that's one thing I love about him. You know, but he and Gardner had been horrible the last month.
Well, and that's what I'm saying. So you had a lefty pitcher, so why didn't you play Jacoby? If you really felt like you had to put Chris Young in the lineup, which made complete sense to me, Gardner's the guy you sit, and you leave your regular center fielder, your star player in center
field. I mean, you could argue either way. Yep. I'm not, you know, I don't totally disagree with you on there. I don't even know if that even would have made a difference at this point. I mean, they had a couple of opportunities last night, you know, especially like the sixth inning, you know, but, you know, A-Rod does what he does. So, you know, yeah, that was, 2009 Springer aside.
Springer made a really nice play on him on that at-bat that he went to right field. The other point I wanted to make was more of a general statement about the Yankees when you were talking about what positives can you take from this season with the Yankees. Viewing from afar, in my opinion, the biggest positive about the Yankees, the biggest reason that they made, the main reason that they were playing in the postseason, was three guys: Wilson, Betances, and Miller. Those three guys at the end of the bullpen were the best three in baseball at the end of a bullpen. And
no, you're right.
A,
and you know,
huge positive.
I think I got because I was so down on it on the game. You're right. Thank you for bringing that up, because that is a good point. I mean, Betances looked a little worn out towards the end of the year, but yeah, I mean, that is a great. They definitely have, the bullpen's not the problem at all. Unfortunately, they had to use the bullpen a little too much this year. You know, my thing was, is if they could have got past last night, or, you know, I was hoping maybe they catch that lightning in a bottle like they did in the middle of the season, you know, and get on that roll and then, you know, do well in the playoffs. But I have to be honest, I even though Keuchel was on 3 days rest, I mean, he just, the other two starts, he just dominated them, and he dominated them again last night. I mean, again, they had their opportunity in the first inning, but once he got past that first inning, then I knew we were in trouble for the evening.
I have a question about the Yankees. Well, a related question for our baseball guy here, Joel. Joel, being kind of an unbiased guy, I guess you're a Chicago guy, so you're not emotionally attached to the rivalry like Dr. G and I are, you know, at opposite ends. Yes. Throwing this year aside, looking to the future, you know, but it's a setup question from my point of view. Whose future do you see brighter? Even though the Yankees finished higher in the race this year, whose future do you like better? Who do you, going forward, the Red Sox or the Yankees?
Don't forget what show made you a star, Joel. Answer that question before you answer this question.
Well, that's a fair point. You know, I could just cop out and say the Tigers, but then everybody would know I'm full of shit.
We're not going to make you have to talk about the Tiger. He's a Tiger fan, senior.
Okay.
We're not going to make you talk about it. We'll wait till the off. We'll wait till the deep off season before we make you talk about it. I don't want you to get depressed and you know, run in front of an Austin tractor trailer or whatever.
Yeah,
so.
wait until my sleeping pills run out. You know, I think, I mean, if we're talking, you know, future, you know, the next 5 years or so, I like Boston a little bit better. I mean, they're completely sandbagged by Sandoval and Ramirez. I mean, those are two of the worst signings in, I dare say right now, they're two of the worst signings in the entire free agent era. They're just bad moves, and that's going to hamstring the team a little bit. But you know, if they play bad enough, Boston's in a market where they could cut contracts like that, you know, with a year or two left and not feel it as much as, say, the Royals or the Pirates or, you know, a team where there's a little bit more of a budget awareness. But the Red Sox have a little bit more youth right now than the Yankees do. Mookie Betts looks like he's going to be a star. I really didn't think he could handle center field on a full-time basis, but he did. He did well enough out there, and then they brought up Bradley Jr., and he looks, defensively, he looks fantastic. He could win Gold Gloves for a while if he finds a way around Kiermaier and Pilar. And, you know, so Bradley and Castillo probably isn't going to be what he's worth, but he could be a decent player. Bogarts looks great. So, you know, I mean, and Dombrowski, I mean, I can tell you firsthand, he's maybe the best or one of the best all time at what he does. He's very good at acquiring talent, and up until maybe, I can count on one hand the number of times he's made a trade that has not worked out in his favor. He's very good at getting teams to take big contracts, which I think could be good for the Sox. He's got a good eye for just hiring good people to help run an organization. So I really think that the Red Sox are in very good shape for the immediate future. The Yankees are going to have some holes to fill. Gardner's going to slow down. Ellsbury's going to slow down. Beltran is pushing, you know, his late 30s, A-Rod's 41, you know, and the pitching staff, I mean, like George said, the bullpen's great, but, I mean, it's relievers, and relievers are fickle, and starters are, you know, I mean, the Yankee starters aren't anything to write home about right now. They're, you know, neither are Boston's, but like I said, Dombrowski's got an eye for that kind of thing, so... I think for the near term, Boston's probably got a better looking road ahead than New York.
Let's look ahead.
Well said, Joel.
Yes.
Thank you, sir. Don't ever call me a Chicago man again.
I'm sorry. That was the impression I've been given. I thought you were a Chicago guy. I totally apologize.
No, it's fine. You know, We Midwesterners, we all look alike.
Yeah, you know, fire your PR agent. This press release is wrong.
Being a Cubbies guy wouldn't be such a bad thing right now.
Yeah,
not right now. Although, you know, I would dare say that, you know, it wasn't worth it for the last 107 years.
Yeah. By the way, it is 4-0 Cubs in the sixth inning. Arrieta's cruising. All right.
Hey, my boy just struck out, Austin Jackson. You know, that's who my nephew's named for. Oddly enough.
Really?
Well, kind of. We were at a ball game, and they were pitching names, and my mom said, "What about Jackson?" And they kind of looked at each other and said, "Yeah, maybe," and that's his name. So, he's not exactly named for him, but close as you can get.
Mm-hmm. You know? Exactly.
All right, let's talk about the two, since these are both set in stone, let's talk about the two AL division series first. We'll start with the aforementioned Houston Astros, who will now begin tomorrow evening, 7:37 first pitch on Thursday from Kauffman Stadium in Kansas City. Ventura will get the game one start, and I'm sure it's going to be Colin McHugh for the Astros. I don't know if that's official, it probably is. Joel.
Yep.
The Royals struggled a little bit at the tail end of the season. They weren't hitting much, and Johnny Cueto really didn't find his groove until mid to late September. can this Royal lineup snap out of it? Because this Astro staff, you're going to see Keuchel probably game three. Let me see. Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Yeah, he'll probably pitch game three at the Juice on Sunday on regular rest. Mm-hmm. So, obviously, the two games at home, I mean, I would think the Royals would expect to win the first two so they don't have to be 1-1 facing Keuchel in game three. So what do you think? Do you think this lineup can snap out of it against this Astro staff? That's question one.
Yeah, I do. I mean, you know, I know they had a really rough stretch in September. That was the, you know, first time all year where they'd allowed more runs than they'd scored. But in October, not that it means a lot, but, I mean, once we turned to October, they went 4-0 and scored 20 runs and only allowed 7, which is, I mean, that's how the Royals win, you know, tight defense, lots of contact, and that lockdown bullpen. And, yeah, I mean, Cueto, I guess what I had kind of read was that he wasn't used to throwing to Salvador Perez because Perez was too tall. He was setting up too high, and so they kind of talked about it, and Perez started setting lower, and that's been part of the turnaround. So, I mean, I think that's going to be of the two American League sets that we've got, I think this one's going to be the most intriguing and the most fun. You know, on the year, Houston won the season series. They played 6 games. Houston won 4 of them. So, you know, I think, you know, Kansas City's gonna have their hands full. Both teams have good bullpens. They both have very good but very different offenses. Kansas City's more of a, you know, they're almost in a weird way. They're almost a throwback to the 85 Royals. Lots of just putting the bat on the ball and taking the extra base and you know, and the defense for both teams is really, really good. So it's really going to be – I think it's going to come down to this. Can the Royals starters keep the Astros in the park, and can the Astros starters keep the Royals off base? And I think it's easier to prevent a single than a home run. So, you know, I'm leaning toward Houston, but it should be – it should be a lot of fun regardless.
I think the Astro lineup is very – it's young. Obviously, against certain pitchers, they don't have to do much. They didn't have to do much Tuesday night. But I have a feeling they're going to struggle to score runs. I mean, you got guys like Carter. I mean, he's like Rob Deere. I didn't realize he had 23 homers and like 73 or 74 RBIs. He's batting 199.
Yeah. I mean,
I didn't realize guys still had those lines. Those lines anymore.
Yeah, it's a very exploitable lineup. And I think with, you know, Ventura and Cueto, I mean, if they put Kansas City up 2-0, and you know that you're probably going to see them, you know, in game 5 or 6. Or, you know, toward the end of the series, you know, it could be a quick exit for Houston, but you know, because I mean, those home runs don't matter that much if you don't have anybody on base to bring in. I mean, you know, a solo shot, you know, is a lot less damaging than, you know, say 3 singles in a row,
right?
So so it should be fascinating. You know, I think that this one, of all the series, I think this one has the most potential to go the full 5, including the National League.
Don't you think it's kind of a bad matchup for Kansas City, Joel, that they were probably rooting pretty hard for the Yankees? Because, I mean, Kansas City's weakness is their starting pitching, right? If they have a weakness, it's definitely their starting pitching. And the Astros are nothing if not streaky, right? And they're the kind of team that can put it together for 3, 4, 5 games and beat anybody, especially a team with shaky starting pitching. So I'm with you. I like the Astros here.
Yeah, yeah, I would agree with that. I think that, you know, Houston, I mean, and I know we talk about momentum not really mattering that much, but, you know, they definitely have, I mean, you know, I know the term gets thrown around a lot, but they are the underdogs this year. There's nobody else that you can say this team's an underdog. I mean, the Mets, I mean, sure, some people, like, you know, what's the name? That one guy in Michigan that moved to Texas, real asshole. Me.
With that shitty press agent.
Yeah, right. You know, I didn't think the Mets would win the division, but I had them, you know, had them as a contender. The Cardinals, Cubs, and Pirates, I mean, they won 198-97 games. They're not underdogs. The Dodgers, they've got more money than Jesus. They're not underdogs. I mean, they're, you know, there's no underdog in this fight anymore except for maybe the two Texas teams. And of those two, you know, the Astros haven't been successful since 05. So I think that'd be a good story to, in addition to, you know, just being, you know, able to get hot as blazes, you know, I mean, overnight they can go on a streak, like Roger said, and rip off 5-6 wins in a row.
I think the key. Good.
I was going to say, I mean, when you talk about an underdog, I mean, there were stories written last year about the Astros that they were doing a disservice to their fan base. They were doing a disservice to the rest of the league with their strategy. And to be in the playoffs now and to be competitive, I completely agree with you there, Joel.
I never saw any of those. I saw a couple of those disservice things, but then I just am like, but that helped them land a lot of this talent. I mean, Springer, Correa, you know, we'll have to see if, you know, Mark Appel turns into anything, but, you know, I mean, that's how it works. You know, if a team is smart, which the Astros are, they have quick turnarounds and, you know, and that's what the
Astros
I don't
think they expected them to be this good this fast, though.
Oh, absolutely. No. I think most of us were thinking, you know, 500 was a benchmark. I mean, granted, they only won like 86, so it's not like they, you know, blew the roof off the joint, but still, they made the playoffs and they're in the division series. And, you know, I think no matter what happens, each and every person in that organization can, you know, say it was a success.
Okay, I'm going to be the devil's advocate here and state the case for the Royals, why I really like the Royals in this series and really beyond. This is a team that last year was the team that surprised in the postseason and went to the World Series and really battled there. And basically, they have all the elements back except for, you know, their biggest strength being their bullpen. They don't have Holland, but that bullpen is still strong even with him down. And they've added some pieces to the already existing team. They didn't really have a big, quote, RBI, middle of the order presence last year. This year, Kendrys Morales has been unbelievable and has certainly been that presence in the middle of the order that's just an RBI machine. Eric Hosmer is a better hitter than he was last year. Certainly, Lorenzo Cain is a more accomplished guy last year. I think last year he was about a 250 hitter going into the postseason. This year he batted over 300. This team went on to follow what they did in the postseason last year, to cruise to the best record in the American League. I think you put all those things together. Plus, they've also added Johnny Cueto, a guy that can be a real prime time starter. I think you put that all together, and this team is really poised to make a run in the postseason. They're loaded, and I think they're ready. And I think Houston's going to run into a freight train.
I agree with Senior. I think so, too. This Astro lineup, I mean, Altuve's a good hitter, but I could see some of these guys swinging and whiffing, struggling with the Royals pitching. And, I mean, honestly, they've got to maybe split at bet, you know, these first two in Kansas City, because if they fall behind 2-0, Yeah, Keuchel could, you know, no-hit them in Game 3, but, you know, McHugh is young but good. I mean, Scott Kazmir, and I think that the experience that they didn't have last year is definitely going to serve them well this year. So I have to side with Senior on this one. I think the Royals are going to win this series.
Kazmir really struggled down the stretch of
the
season.
He had
a great first half.
Yeah. I think this Astro lineup is going to... I mean, let's be honest. The Yankee pitching Tuesday night, 3 runs and 5 hits. If Dallas Keuchel wasn't pitching, that game might have gone a different way. It's not like they lost. It's not like the Yankee pitching gave up 8 runs and 15 hits. 3 runs and 5 hits. Now, is that enough against Dallas Keuchel? Probably. But Colin McHugh, as good as he is not Dallas Keuchel. Scott Kazmir is certainly not Dallas Keuchel. I think it's nice to just say the name Dallas Keuchel because it's so strange. But the Astros are not going to win a game in this series scoring 3 runs on 5 hits. It's not going to happen.
The Royal lineup is miles better than what the Yankees.
Very balanced.
Last night.
Yeah, very balanced. Yeah. I think it's going to be a tough road for the Astros in this series. So, do we have go ahead, Doctor.
I'm only going to give the Royals the edge because of the experience from last year, but I think it's going to go to the full 5 games now.
I think you're
underestimating the Astros.
I think the fact Keuchel had to pitch on last night is going to hurt them because Game 5 would be Wednesday, and if Keuchel pitches Sunday, you know, unless they stretch him out and maybe he pitches Monday Game 4, but... you know, I don't know if a Game 5 in Kansas City, Colin McHugh or Scott Kazmir could win. I can't see that, particularly if they face a good and if Johnny Cueto has one of those nights, I think the Astros are cooked. I think the fact they had to play, this is probably going to be the first time that the Astros having to play the wild card game is going to bite them in the ass in the end, because they would love to have had Keuchel pitch tomorrow.
That's the very fair disadvantage that you're in, being a team that won 86 games and had to play the wild card game.
Yep.
On the other side of the coin, what's going on in the National League, whichever team comes out of this, and it looks like it's going to be the Cubs, is kind of been put at that same disadvantage.
Yep.
Sort of unfairly with the season those two teams have, having the second and third best records in baseball. It really is a shame.
But how arrogant, and
they
gonna
had to play in that game.
Right. And how arrogant is the, and we'll get to the Cardinals in a minute. By the way, Senior, since we haven't talked baseball yet on this show, my feelings about the Cardinals are about the same as your feeling for the Colts. Just letting you know.
Let me just say, Scott, as soon as the word arrogant came out of your mouth, I knew Cardinals wasn't far behind.
That's how well Joel knows me. They got a lot of – I mean, we'll get to the Cardinals in a minute. So what do we think? Let's go around the horn. Doctor likes the Royals. Senior likes the Royals. I like the Royals. Cowboy, you like Houston. Joel, you like Houston?
Yeah, but I do agree that I think this could go 5.
Okay.
But yeah, I like Houston.
All right. Let's take a look at the other AL division series, which will start.
Before we go really quickly.
Yeah, go ahead, Cowboy.
I think you're very much overselling the Kansas City Royals pitchers. And we can move on to the next game now.
Okay. I think what's going to hurt the Astros is that their ace is not pitching tomorrow.
And then if you say it's game 5, I mean they're facing Yordano Ventura, who's been good, but
right.
I mean, is there a big difference between him and McHugh? I mean, frankly, McHugh's been better most of the year.
Yeah. So all right.
That's where I'm at. Neither one of them are Arrieta or Kershaw.
There are those of us who don't see this game 5 scenario even being a reality, so.
Okay. Let's dive into the other AL division series, which to me seems like industrial, you know, open league softball on a Sunday morning. The Eastern champion Toronto Blue Jays, who have been, since the trade deadline, have been just mashing the hell out of the ball like a softball team, taking on the upstarts and a team who I didn't know top to bottom was going to be really this good. I think you want to talk about a team that caught lightning in a bottle late, and that's the Texas Rangers, who I think caught Houston at a vulnerable moment in mid to late August into early September. That series is the first series that'll play. 3:37 first pitch on Thursday. Joel, my issue here is I'm not a big fan of either pitching staff. Mm-hmm. I certainly don't like. I mean, Cole Hamels is okay, but as we've seen, Cole Hamels, you know, is a kook. We saw that in 2009 when he pitched against the Yankees. When the greatest quote that you could ever hear a pitcher in the World Series say is, "I can't wait till this is over."
Yeah, he's a little bit different.
Yeah, that's a nice way to put it. I think that's a very safe way to put it.
Right, or you know, in baseball terminology, he's a lefty. You know.
Yeah.
But yeah, personality aside, he's very talented, and this is what they traded for him for. I like Toronto's pitching staff a little bit better. I think they have a little more depth to it, especially with Price. You know, I mean, he's the definition of a big game pitcher. He's the guy you want out there. You know, to just illustrate one measure of how good he's been, mm-hmm. he's only been with the team, what, August, September. And he's ninth on the team in wins above replacement in 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and then, I mean, you fill it out. Dickey's had a decent season, but his second half was solid. Estrada's pitched way better than anybody thought he would when they got him for Adam Lind. The bullpen's really kind of come together nicely. I mean, you know, their highest ERA in that bullpen of their regular guys is Aaron Sanchez at 3.22, and he struck out. You know, he's been a great reliever. You know, Osuna is 20, so maybe there's a little bit of an experience and nerves factor there, but still, you know, he's been a good pitcher all year. He's struck out 75 in 69 innings. So I you know, there's a little more depth to the Toronto staff, and their offense is amazing. And they've got a great defense. I mean, it's just, I think that's the one thing everybody looks past is just how phenomenal this defense is. I mean, everywhere you look in that lineup, if Tulowitzki's in there, they've got a good defensive player mm-hmm. all over the field, every spot. Top to bottom. Justin Smoke, he's not a good hitter, but he still hit 18 homers, and he has saved countless throwing errors from that infield. I mean, Russell Martin is maybe one of the best all-around catchers in baseball. Just a really balanced club, and you know, as good as the Rangers have been, I don't know if they have the depth in the bullpen or in the rotation. Or even in the lineup,
right?
You know, to hang with Toronto right now.
So Joel, don't you think? I mean, talking about their staff, I think the key to their staff is Stroman. I mean, he's been lights out since he came back. I think he's pitching game two. I mean, if he pitches like that, he's a legit number two.
Yeah,
with Price and with that offense, and I mean, I think. If he pitches the way he has since he came back, I think that they have to be. And I know it's crazy to say with some of the team with the Cardinals and whatnot in the National League, but I think they have to be the favorite to win the World Series. And I brought this up the last time we had baseball on here. If you look at their run differential, mm-hmm. it's like 100 runs more than the second team.
127.
They scored 891 runs, which, you know, I mean. 20 years ago, that was kind of, you know, mediocre. That was kind of bottom of the list. But now that's blowing everybody away. And, yeah, I mean, they can do everything. And that's what you want to see out of a, you know, best team in baseball kind of thing. But, yeah, that's a great point about Stroman. He's 4-0 with a 1.69 ERA since coming back. And, you know, I know back in spring training before he hurt himself, you know, everybody was talking him up like, you know, like he could turn into an ace, which, you know, I mean, I always take those with a grain of salt for a guy who's in his second or third year, but he right now he damn sure looks like a really solid, you know, second option behind Price, who is already very well established. So yeah, that's a great point that Stroman could definitely be the, you know, the ace up the Blue Jays' proverbial sleeve here.
And I think this series has like ugly sweep written all over it.
I think so too.
I can't argue with you on that one.
Yeah, I think so too. The Blue Jays scored 10 or more runs in a game 26 times this year. The second team that did it, the number two on the list is the Rangers, who did it 17 times. But as we've seen, and as the doctor knows firsthand, what, three times during the dynasty, the Texas Ranger lineup can be shut down. Was it? Twice, 96 and was it 99, I think? The Rangers scored over 1,000 runs in that season, and then they faced the Yankee pitching. And they scored, what, one run in three games or something? 27 innings, like two runs and five hits or something?
Something crazy like that. Yeah. So, yeah, I don't think Texas has good enough pitching to shut down this Toronto lineup. And they built this team. I mean, when they made these moves, they made these moves to win the World Series.
Now, the Blue Jays are pretty much on, like, Mets 2006 borrow time because they're farm system right now, there is no farm. It's dirt. It's like the Grapes of Wrath. It's just a big dust bowl because they got ungats in their minor league system right now because they gave away friggin' everybody. So,
if they win a ring, though, it's worth it.
If they win the one ring, it's worth it, and then they'll you know, because I can't see them. That's a lot of money on that field for them to try to pay for.
That's so true. But a lot of, I mean, not everybody, but a fair number of the guys they've got are still, you know, relatively prime. I mean, mm-hmm. but Batista and Encarnacion, they're late prime. So, yeah, it could be a small window, and but I have to give them kudos for going for it. You know,
right.
I mean, I sat and watched, you know, what, 8 years of Detroit doing the same thing, just emptying that farm system year after year after year, and they got nothing. And I can't tell you how crushing that is to now look at the window in Detroit, slammed shut. It's going to take a hell of an off season to open it back up, if at all.
Right.
And to say we have no ring to show for it, I mean that's really a hard fact to face. And mm-hmm. so I got to give Toronto credit for, you know, yeah, they emptied the cupboard, but they've got a damn good shot at it.
Mm. Giovanni Gallardo. Some other stats to throw at you guys. Gallardo.
And another fun name to say, by the way.
Giovanni Gallardo. Giovanni Gallardo. Dallas Keuchel. Gallardo started two games against the Blue Jays this year. Won them both. 13 scoreless innings. So, it's something interesting. So, it looks like it's going to be Gallardo game one, Hamels game two on full rest, which means he would pitch game five if there was one, and Holland in game three. So, it'll be Gallardo, Price, Hamels, Stroman, and Holland, Dickey, first three games. I agree with Roger. I have a feeling that the Ranger lineup is going to melt. I think there's going to be a lot of mashing, and I think the Blue Jays sweep. I don't know if Texas can win a game in this series.
I mean, clearly the best chance is game two with Stroman against Hamels, but even that, I think they're in trouble. I mean, by throwing Gallardo out there in game one, I mean, they're almost forfeiting.
Well, like I said, he pitched.
I mean, they're just feeding him to Price, right? I mean, that's what they're doing, right? They're trying to set themselves up for the game two win to get out of there 1-1. It's the only explanation I can think of.
Yeah, and you look at that game two, and you see Hamels, and I agree he's an accomplished pitcher, but as a left-hander, how do you feel when that murderer's row of four start to come up against you? Donaldson, Tulowitzki, Batista, and Encarnacion all in a row. It's just so imposing. I just don't think Texas has the pitching to hold up against these guys either.
Yeah, and all four of those guys, right-handed. So
yeah, that's what I'm saying. As a lefty, it's just brutal.
Yeah,
it's not like you can pull one of those guys for a matchup. And yeah, I think In one-run games, Toronto gets killed. They're 15-28 in a one-run game. Texas is 27-22. I don't think we're going to see a lot of one-run games here. So Toronto in blowouts, 37-12. Texas, 22-25. I'm going to go with the Jays, but I think I'm going to go with Jays in four. I think somehow the Rangers pull one home game win out of their keister. But I like the Jays here.
On another note, the bench is emptied in the seventh inning here after they plunked Arrieta.
You just said that as my at-bat popped up. I don't have the game on.
He had hit.
He had hit
Francisco Cervelli.
He'd also hit Harrison. He'd hit two.
Cervelli was like real Yankee dramatic about it when he got hit.
Yankee dramatic.
Yeah.
Cervelli is dramatic. Does he still have a very large helmet?
It's the same old Cervelli.
I don't know about that, but he cannot take a flat back bump to save his life.
Yeah, he's got to go to NXT. I mean, yeah.
He can tuck his chin.
Right.
But, you know, Arrieta hit two of them, two Pirates, and then they plunked Arrieta. I didn't see if it was an intentional, or anything, but I did see the benches clear
intentional.
I'm sure it was. I didn't see how intentional it looked, though. But I'm sure there was something behind it.
Yeah,
that would be the Cubs' luck if he got hurt.
No kidding.
Oh my God! And boy, would Clint Hurdle look like a douche? Wow.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about the one National League Division Series that is official, because we don't know who the Cardinals are going to play. And that is, of course, the one that I obviously care the most about. That series begins Friday night, 9:45, first pitch.
Right, Nationals Dodgers, just like we predicted, right?
Yeah, no kidding, right?
Oh shit!
No. Game one, Jacob DeGrom against Clayton Kershaw. Tuesday game two, or a Saturday night game two, it will be Noah Syndergaard against Zach Greinke. Game three on Monday, Matt Harvey and Brett Anderson. And then game four would be Steven Matz against who knows. I don't know who the fourth starter would be for the Dodgers. I can't see them pitching Kershaw in 3 days rest. And I guess it depends if they're down two games to one. But I watched last night, the last two nights, I just went getting myself pumped up. I went to my MLB.tv, which archives all the games throughout the regular season. And I went back to watching a couple of Mets-Dodger games from July. They played in July. The Mets took 4 out of 7 for the season. They took 2 out of 3 out at Chavez Ravine, and then they split 4 at Citi Field. Obviously, when these two teams played in July, things looked very different for both, particularly for the Mets. I mean, there was a Sunday game at Dodger Stadium. Steven Matz beat, I forgot who started for the Dodgers, beat him 8-0. And this was a game where Wilmer Flores was batting cleanup. Johnny Monell was catching. And this was during that stretch where they weren't scoring squat. I mean, they got swept by the Cubs at Citi Field. I think they scored 2 runs in 3 games. And that Friday night, Thor and Kershaw pretty much went pitch for pitch. The Mets won in the 12th. And then Harvey got bombed on that Saturday. Greinke, I think, gave up 2 hits in 8 innings or something. And then they won the third game. It's kind of hard. And, you know, the Dodgers now have Seager. They brought Seager up, and he's been a world beater. And obviously the Met lineup is very different than from early July. It's hard to handicap this series objectively because these two teams seem very different than when they last faced each other in the regular season. The Mets frustrate Kershaw and Greinke. That doesn't mean that they couldn't get beat by them. But I find that at least what I've watched the last 2 months, it's a very confident lineup who's not afraid of anybody. And I could see them really working both pitchers, particularly Kershaw. Joel, your thoughts on how this Met lineup now, as the way it's built, can handle the top of this rotation?
Well, I think you said it well, Scott. I think that the key is, you know, that they're not afraid of anybody anymore. I think, you know, early in the season, you know, when they had some injuries and they were missing David Wright and they didn't have, you know, Cespedes, and they had, you know, their catching situation was kind of up and down with Darno getting hurt and then coming back and then getting hurt, and a few of their other bats struggling. I think they were a very timid, very, very sort of limp lineup, and, you know, getting those guys healthy and getting Cespedes, again, you're welcome.
Hey, we didn't give you chopped liver.
That's true, but, you know, I'm,
and actually,
again,
the Red Sox fans on this show should be thanking me, because it's because of that trade you now have a new VP of baseball operations.
That's very true.
So,
but yeah, it's a very confident lineup. You know, I think getting Wright and Conforto and Cespedes in there, you know, really gives the lineup a lot more depth than they had early in the year. It's still not a scary, like, you know, terrifying lineup. It's not Toronto terrifying. It's
right.
Not, you know, but it's strong. There's a good foundation to it now that they were missing before.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you're right. I think with Kershaw, you know, he's starting to get a rep, fair or not. He's getting a rep as a guy who can't pitch in the postseason, which, you know, again, you know, maybe unfair, but he's definitely, I think of the two aces, I think he's the one they're going to try to beat. He's the one they're going to say, look, he's got the reputation. Let's just try to wait him out, work his pitch count up, try to get that bullpen in there and just beat him up. And I think with Greinke, the year he's had, honestly, I would just pass. I would just say, you know what, we're probably not going to beat Zach Greinke. Let's just try to beat everybody else. Because I think that can be done. With the Mets lineup, I think they can beat every other pitcher LA throws except Greinke. But, you know, having said that, they'll probably do the exact opposite.
It's funny you say that. That's an interesting theory, Joel, because besides the Scott Boras bullshit, I wonder if that's the reason that they're holding off Matt Harvey until Monday, because they feel that, you know what, Syndergaard's going to do the best he can. He may keep this game close, and the Dodger bullpen is nothing. It's no great shakes.
No, it's better than it's been in the past few years. But it's, yeah, it's still not.
It's not the Royals kind of thing. You know what I'm saying?
No, it's not a Royals bullpen. It's not the Yankees bullpen. It's
right.
It's mid pack.
Right. So sure. Thor is the kind of guy, and he pitched great in the one start he had out at Dodger Stadium. He may, now, mind you, he may give up a couple of bombs and lose 5-0, and, you know, that's fine. He's a kid. Hopefully he'll be back. You know, hopefully he'll pitch another game in this postseason after this. Who knows? I think that this Mets team has a swagger about them. The Dodgers are not a team they fear. I don't think they fear anybody. But if they go to if they go to New York down 2-0, I still think they'll feel fine. Now, Kershaw is the one that would get the start in game 5. Now, the only bad, well, see, now I'm looking at the schedule. The Mets are kind of screwed both ways, because both the way this schedule got laid out, Greinke and Kershaw would have full rest in both games. In fact, I think Kershaw would have like 5 days rest. Actually, maybe 6. So the Mets can at least stretch out. They could start Cologne in game 4 if they really needed to. I have a feeling Steven Matz will pitch. And then DeGrom will have more than enough rest for game 5. And I think he's the one young guy that has no problem dealing with, you know, road pressure. I think the key is the bullpens. I think the Mets 7, 8, 9 is better. Reed, Clippard, and Familia. So for me, my personal opinion, obviously, The key here is if the Mets can just at least stay close in both these first two games. If they can hang around. They don't have to lead. I mean, I'd like them to, personally, of course. But if they're 1-1 in the eighth, that's what I would love. Because I don't think they're going to bomb either of those guys. Well, they're certainly not going to bomb Greinke. They could hit Kershaw, but I don't think they'll hit him enough to be comfy. But if they can stretch out the game and shorten it, I think the Mets are would be in good shape to win at least one of the first two games out there. So we'll see. I think it's
Kershaw's been lights out.
He has, yeah.
I mean, really, really lights out. I mean, it's a real tall order. You need, I mean, I think you need DeGrom or Syndergaard to basically to throw a shutout to beat one of these guys in.
I mean, what Met lineup are you going to see here? I mean, the one from the last week or so. See, the Mets lineup, and I was talking about this with Scott the other day, is kind of like the Yankees lineup. It's either all or nothing. And
I was a little upset this week that I feel like the Met lineup didn't try. I don't want to say, and I'm not just going to discount. I'm not going to discount Max Scherzer's no hitter last Saturday, not at all. But I think those guys kind of, I think they tanked it a little bit at the end there. I'm not going to lie, but I think they're reamped. I think they've had the last 4 days, regardless of this Matt Harvey nonsense, which I think is just for the New York papers to have something to do, because the Yankees aren't playing tomorrow and the Mets aren't playing on Friday. So I think they just needed something to do. But yes, you're right, Dr. G. I agree. Now, Cespedes didn't face Greinke or Kershaw, obviously, because he was traded after they had played their games. And Cespedes is a better hitter against righties and lefties. He may be the wild card against Greinke. He might be a guy that could hit Greinke that none of the other righties or lefties in the lineup can do. He might be a guy Greinke has to be nervous about. But again, this is all, you know, conjecture. I'm not going to make a pick on this series, obviously, for obvious reasons, because you know who I'm going to pick. But I'll go around the horn. Senior, how do you feel?
Before I pick, I'm going to tell you that I'm going to be looking with a whole lot of interest in Game 1. Just because, you know, you said fair or unfair, Kershaw has a rep of not being able to pitch in the postseason. It's kind of beyond a rep. I mean, let's face it. His ERA in the postseason is over 7. The guy who's been the most dominant pitcher in baseball the last few years has really fallen flat on his face in the postseason. And, okay, part of that we might say it seems like it's always been the Cardinals. He's definitely got a hurdle to get over there. And is it the Cardinals? Is it the postseason? I really think that that's the whole key, that if you get the dominant Kershaw in Game 1 and the Dodgers win that game, I just think that's going to give them such a psychological boost that, you know, hey, our guy has finally arrived for a postseason. And then they follow that up with Greinke. They're going to be really hard to beat. But if you get the Kershaw that suddenly just turns into a different guy in the postseason, like what's happened every other time he's been there, then you got to really like the Mets in the series. So that is my key to the series. And if you want me to guess, I don't know. I just have to say that the guy just has too much damn talent to constantly fall on his face in the postseason, and he's going to come through this time. But maybe I'm wrong, and maybe there's the guy doesn't have it in his belly at under crunch time. He wouldn't be the first guy that performs real well and isn't as good when the lights are the brightest, you know? So
he did also tank in the All-Star game.
So it's a real interesting thing. Being a Mets fan, that was real nice here to say fair or unfair, but no, that's a fair criticism, Scott. There's no fair or unfair about it. He's been a bum in the postseason. He hasn't even been decent. He's been a punching bag in the postseason.
Yep.
And he really has something to prove. So me watching Kershaw in Game 1 is the key to the whole series. Now, taking a look at the baseball as a whole right now, the baseball postseason, as a person unlike you, Scott, I don't have a horse in the race. My team's been out for a long time. I'm watching it purely as a baseball fan. Something that I would just love to see, that Toronto, bing, 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 big four, and that mashing lineup, go in the World Series against Kershaw, who has just gone through two series in the postseason, proving he can pitch in the postseason, being the real Kershaw, and Greinke. I would love to see that in the World Series. That would be the greatest theater you could get mm-hmm. right now for a baseball fan who doesn't have a horse in the race. Mm. So, okay. Anyway, I'm watching that game one with great curiosity. If I have to pick, I'm going to pick the Dodgers, but I wouldn't be shocked if he falls on his face again because history tells us he does.
I think you could say the same thing about the Toronto lineup against Arrieta. Too. I mean, Arrieta's been absolutely incredible. I mean, it's the best second half in basically the history of the major leagues. Is that fair to say?
Hmm. Yeah. I mean,
well, it's just
pretty close to it.
You put the guy behind him, and nothing against John Lester, but it's not like coming back with Zach Greinke with the season he had in game two. I mean, that's just
agreed.
That's
agreed.
Just two of the best pitchers in baseball, hands down. Two of the top five, obviously, going against a murderer's row like we've never seen. You know, so it would be a great theater.
The Mets and Blue Jays did play this season back in June. So both teams who probably obviously made the biggest splashes at the deadline, pre-trades, they had one of those 2-2 series where it was a four-game set. They played two at Citi Field and two at the Rogers Center. The two games at Citi Field were low-scoring. The Mets won both, one in extra innings and the other, I think it was like 1-0 or 2-0. And then the two games at Rogers Center, the Blue Jays mashed them. In fact, there were some guys in the Mets bullpen that like went back down to Vegas like the next day. I think there was one guy that had to pitch like a couple innings and he gave up like six runs and a third. Like his ERA is like 75 or something, and they had to send him back. So, but again, it's funny because the Mets were a completely different team. The only team in this postseason that has faced the Mets post trade deadline and handled them is going to be out of the postseason, and that's the Pirates. Post Cespedes, the Pirates swept the Mets in three straight at Citi Field. And the only way that they got saved from losing first place is that the Giants swept the Nationals that same weekend. The Mets lost zero ground that weekend. So other than that, the Mets and Cubs played before the deadline, and the Met lineup was fucking trash. So they got shut out like three straight times at Citi Field. The Cardinals, they battled. I think the Cardinals took four out of seven, but those games were all battles. I think one game at Busch, the Mets got blown out. The Blue Jays, those games were all before the deadline, and they didn't play Texas, and they didn't play Kansas City. So that's the interesting thing for me as a Met fan, because these games are all going to be against this Mets lineup that they've never seen before. So that's my hope. Like you said, Senior, to kind of piggyback what you were saying, Kershaw didn't face a rejuvenated Lucas Duda. He didn't face a Cespedes or a healthy David Wright, who's may not have only he may have only been in one postseason, but he's not a Johnny come lately. So, as for Doctor, you had something?
No, I thought we were going to pick. I like the Dodgers in four. I think the Mets will win the Harvey game.
Okay. Doctor wants to pick the Dodgers because he just can't stand the Met fans in his life. And you don't want to pick against Donnie, so.
No, I'm trying to be unbiased here, but I do think that the Dodgers are going to pull this one out, though, on you. I think it'll go four or five games, but I just think I think the Dodgers the thing that scares me is that Mets lineup. You just don't. It's a very unpredictable lineup. Either it's going to be all or nothing. And I agree with Cowboy Senior in terms of Kershaw. Let's put it this way: if Kershaw gets smacked around a little bit in Game One, Mets have a shot because I think that will hurt the confidence. But if Kershaw pitches really well and the Dodgers win that game, that may take a little wind out of the sails of the Mets.
Okay. Joel, you going to make it a clean sweep?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I do like the Mets a lot, but and when I wrote my piece this week predicting stuff.
On PlaySpNation.com.
Yes, on placetobenation.com. I was, you know, I was lucid. I was clear-headed.
Mm-hmm.
I was not mixing NyQuil and DayQuil. Which, by the way, tastes terrible. Don't do it.
And what color is it? Orange and blue? Which, by the way, yeah, that's colors.
That's true. And they were the colors of my high school.
Metsquil. I might be drinking that by game four, so.
Oh, God. That sounds horrible.
I know it does.
Starting to make me sick.
Those are also Tigers colors.
Yes, they are.
And I will say
the blue's
that
a little darker.
Yeah, it is. But you got to admit that old English D, beautiful.
It's awesome. Oh, it's awesome. Beautiful. Love it.
And it did get me thinking. Even though I don't have a dog in the race, much like Senior, I've still got Cespedes and Price that I can root for. Mm-hmm. So I'm okay. But yeah, I do like what George said. I agree that if the Mets beat Kershaw in game one, it's a series. But I just can't get over that, you know, 80% of this series is the two best pitchers in the National League, or two of the top three. And I know the Dodger bullpen's not that good, but both those guys can go if needed, and if they're on, 7, 8, 9 innings.
And Jansen's really good. I mean, getting to him isn't as good, but I mean, he's very, yeah, very good.
Yeah, he is fantastic. And I think the Dodger lineup is, especially with Seager in there, it's as good or better than the Mets lineup on most days, if you've got Seager and Kendrick in there.
I disagree with you on that.
It's close, but I think they've got more depth to that lineup. The Mets don't have quite the depth, but regardless, I go with the Dodgers just because of that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, 80%, and I know Kershaw's got a rep, you know, we've talked about it, but Greinke is just, I mean, if Greinke gives them two wins, they need one more. And if you get, so they need one more win, and two of those three chances are Kershaw. So I just, I can't put my money on the Mets.
Okay. I'll tell you this. I'm not a fan of the Dodger lineup. I mean, that Kiki Fernandez, I think it is. You know, is it Fernandez or Hernandez? I think it's Hernandez. I think he's hit or miss. Not a big Howie Kendrick fan. I like Adrian Gonzalez, obviously. And I think the Mets do get hurt in this series by not having Juan Uribe. But yeah, their bench now is a lot better than the bench they played last against the Dodgers. And bums like John Mayberry are gone. But I will say this. I'm not – every year that the Mets make the postseason, you know, every 500 years or whatever – I do get skittish because I feel like it is a one-trick pony. But for the first time since 1986, 87, 88, I feel like this is the beginning of something for this franchise. So I'm going into the series thinking, you know what? If we lose in five games or whatever, that sucks. But at least I feel that this team has a future. Whereas every other Mets team, even 2006, I always felt like that was it, and then they were cooked. So I feel at peace going into the series as a fan. Do I want to win? Yeah. Do I think we could beat Kershaw? Yes. Do I think we could beat Greinke? Why the fuck not? You know? I think they could beat any of them if the lineup is patient enough.
As a fan, you're going to think that way.
But I also think the Mets starters are being a little discounted here. You know, maybe as a rookie going in with nothing to lose is even more dangerous than a guy like Kershaw who has everything to lose. Think about that.
I just want to see this young pitching, because the way these pitchers are babied today, are they going to have the stamina?
Yeah. Can they hold up?
That's going to be a key thing. And I have to be honest with you, Mets bullpen's pretty good at the back end, but I want to see Familia
in a
high pressure situation, because that guy makes you nervous sometimes.
And I feel the same way about Osuna for the Blue Jays. When your closer is 20 years old. Interesting.
That's a fair point, but remember Francisco Rodriguez was 20 years old when the Angels won everything. So age is not always the most important thing. But yeah, I agree with George. I think it'll be interesting to see how the Mets' young pitching responds to it. I mean, I think all of them have swagger. All of them have confidence. But, you know, but it'll be interesting to see if just that the number of pitches that they've thrown this year catches up to them. And it's definitely going to be, you know, we talked about, you know, the American League, you know, that we said the Jays series, probably, you know, probably Jays in a pretty uninteresting blowout. Royals, Astros, you know, I know we were split on our votes, but I think we all agree that it'll be, you know, it'll be fun to watch because mm-hmm. the two teams have so many, they're unique in their approach, but I think this series could be the most, like, that classic sort of, this series could epitomize what you think of when you think postseason baseball.
Right.
Low scoring, one run, one play makes a difference type. I mean, that could be all five games.
Yeah.
And this could be a great series. Really could.
Now, we won't delve into the other net division series because technically we don't know who the Cardinals are playing. But my personal opinion, and let's go around the horn quick. I'll start with you, Joel. I think the Cardinals would beat Pittsburgh. I don't think they can beat the Cubs.
Yeah, I, you know, again, when I wrote my piece on placetobenation.com, I had the Pirates somehow finding a way to win the wild card game, which it really doesn't look like they're going to do. 4-0 bottom of the eighth, with one out. And then I did have the Pirates somehow beating the Cardinals, which I, you know, I mean, look, we're talking about a 100-win team, a 98-win team, and a 97-win team. We're splitting hairs.
Right.
In the, you know, and so, you know, I still think the Cardinals, they just find a way to win. They just somehow do it. I think Wainwright is going to be a secret weapon for them. I mean, he's a starter who's fresh. He's like Stroman for the Jays. The only difference is one of them's going to start and the other one's going to relieve. And I think that makes Wainwright more dangerous because he can pitch one inning and he could potentially pitch in, you know, four or five of the games, you know, and he's a guy you can stretch out. You could go two innings. Probably won't bother him because he's used to pitching, you know, a lot. So,
is he ready?
You know, that's the question.
Are the Cardinals panicking?
I don't think they're panicking about him. I think they're worried more about Molina and his thumb.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to play. He's going to wear a splint. But when they have Molina behind the plate, they're a much better team.
But their lineup's got holes, though.
It does. It's got
Jason
very
Hayward could totally
holes.
Vanish.
True.
Could totally vanish.
Yeah.
He can also match the crap out of the ball. So.
Yeah, and he's a guy that can help you even when he's not hitting because his defense is fantastic.
Yeah.
That being said, I mean, Arrieta, right now is just he's on another planet.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if the Cubs have the pitching depth behind him, and we kind of touched on that earlier. So, you know, I think I got to go with the Cardinals in, again, another just classic, wonderful five-game series. I think it's going to be – those two National League series are going to be amazing. Like, if you can take the week off of work, do it, and just watch those. They'll be so much fun.
Mm. Well, Joel, thank you for joining us in your premiere on the Sports Evolution. You're awesome as always. We'll have you back on. I'll be back on in a couple weeks. Maybe when these series kind of wrap up, we'll talk about the NL and ALCSs and see if everyone is. But I promise you, we won't have to talk about the Tigers till at least Thanksgiving.
Oh, thank God.
Yeah.
And that should be good.
And geez, don't talk about the Yankees. So,
yeah.
And Doctor and Cowboy have other fish to fry in their sports world, so they don't even care about the Red Sox at this point. So, Joel. Thanks for joining us. You're the best, man.
Thanks, Joel.
Hey, thank you.
Enjoy the
thanks,
Lone Star State. When we come back.
It was a pleasure, Joel.
All right. Yeah, it was a pleasure talking to you guys, too, and look forward to doing it again.
When we come back on Sports Evolution, the Cowboys and the Doctor and I will break down week 5 in the NFL. Big game in Cincinnati. Big Sunday night game for the Doctor at the Meadowlands. NFL coming up on Sports Evolution.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com. The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes at PlaceToBeNation.com. You can check out Scott Criscolo and me on The Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, home of great interviews and our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. If you need your fix of current wrestling talk, we have plenty of options for you, including Main Event, which features a roundtable discussion led by PTBN analysts and special guests, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows, including immediate feedback and discussion for WWE, NXT, Ring of Honor, and New Japan Super shows. Also, be sure to relive wrestling's past with Graham Cawthon's excellent exclusive History of Wrestling podcast, Phil Schneider's Digging in the Crates, and our monthly pay-per-view rewind roundtable series led by Ben Morse, and join Pro Wrestling Only's Will and I on the Dangerous Alliance podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. Sports fans have plenty to enjoy as well. We feature the Sports Evolution Mega Show with Scott, Dr. G, Cowboy, and Cowboy Sr., The Kings of Sport, led by Live Audio Wrestling's godfather Nate Milton, as well as the NBA Team Podcast, which takes a year-round deep dive into pro hoops, and the TJ McClune Show, featuring great guests from around the world of sports journalism. PTBN also proudly features the Richard the Mailman Podcast, specializing in the world of TV, thought leadership, anger, and irreverence. As mentioned, all these shows available on PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. PTBN also is a home to tremendous in-depth features on pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tourneaments and more. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, Scott Keith's RSPWFAQ.com blog, and Piledriver.net.
Do you watch pro wrestling? Do you love pro wrestling? We do too. And there's only one podcast feed that you can't miss.
PWO PTBN Podcast Network. That's the pro wrestling only Place to Be Nation Podcast Network.
We have a host of brilliant shows dedicated to wrestling past and present.
Whether it's the territories, Japan, Lucha, old school or new school, we've got something for you.
Get a dose of history on Exile on Bad Street with Chris Zellner.
Listen to reviews of current pay-per-views on the PTBN reaction shows. Not just WWE, but New Japan, Ring of Honor, and NXT. And get your weekly update on everything else that's going on in the indies, lucha, and beyond on This Week in Wrestling.
Relive WCW Supercards on Where the Big Boys Play with Parv and Chad.
Join Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave on one of the very best shows for super hardcore nerds wrestling culture.
Go deep into WWF history and discover the Bob Backlund and Bruno Sammartino eras on Titans of Wrestling.
Don't miss the Pro Wrestling Super Show with Stephen Graham and Tim Livingston.
You can get the full archive of Good Will Wrestling with Good Old Will from Texas.
There's Tag Teams back again with Kelly and Marty Sleaze.
Then there's the only pro wrestling game show, Brainbuster, with me, Johnny Sorrow, and a panel of great guests every time.
Get them all on one feed.
PWOPTBN Podcast Network.
You know you want to hear it.
Welcome back, Place to Be Nation, to episode 5 of the Sports Evolution. Scott Criscolo, the Doctor, Dr. G. George Bloomer, Cowboy, Cowboy Sr. We thank Joel Barnhart, he's the best. We'll have him back on in a couple weeks as we go deeper into the postseason. PlaceToBeNation.com, your home for everything pop culture. Place to Be Nation's excellent WWE Network Adventure, number 8, released today. as some of the staff, myself, JR, Brad, Chad, Greeny, going through all the stuff on the WWE Network. We went over the World Class Championship Wrestling episode from November 11th, 1982. Got to get myself some Magic Dragon and Checkmate.
You were on another show?
No, this is an article.
Oh, okay.
Written piece.
I was gonna say, 'cause
a wonderful written piece.
Stalk me.
Dr. G. A wonderful written piece. Check it out. Sellers Points, the new 52s, top 20. Glenn Butler's Wednesday Walk Around the Web. The NBA Team Podcast, the Adam Murray, Andrew Reich, continuing previewing the 2015-2016 season. Dave Musgrave continues his Voke Hanathon. We're at part three. And as Joel mentioned, his MLB postseason predictions. And on Monday, the Kevin Kelly Show, episode 44, they had on Matt Stryker, part one of that interview. So check it out. PlacementNation.com, your home for everything pop culture. Click on the right, you'll see the Amazon link. So as Christmas is coming close and other holidays, check the website, go to Amazon, buy your stuff, we get a piece. And also, you'll click on the link and you can check out JR's and my first ebook from the Vintage Vault Refreshes from WrestleMania 1 to Survivor Series 1992. So check it out. PlacementNation.com, your home for everything pop culture. I think that's the fastest plug that I've ever done for the site. All right.
Well done, Scott.
Thank you. From the diamond to the gridiron, week 5 will begin in earnest Thursday night at NRG Stadium in Houston as the Texans host seniors team, the Colts. Luck playing?
He's playing.
All right.
He's probably going to play. It looks like he's going to play.
All right.
But what did you think of those boys last week? I mean, I know Luck didn't play, but that was the Jags. You had to, miss a field goal on the last play of the game, but the coach of the year, Chuck Pagano, calls timeout to ice him, and he gets another chance. He misses again. Then he gets another attempt in overtime that would have won the game, and he misses again. And the Colts with another heroic victory over the rough-and-tumble Jacksonville Jaguars. And, you know, as I predicted, they won those two games in their division. Even me, the biggest Colts detractor, never thought that they were going to have that much trouble with Tennessee and Jacksonville. Mm. I mean, they are worse dogs than I could have ever imagined. I mean, really, just an – this is the trendy pick to go to the Super Bowl before the season started. All the boys on NFL Network and the other one, the four-letter network, they were all picking the Colts. Of course, you couldn't pick the Patriots, so – you pick the Colts. You've got to be kidding me. This team is an absolute joke. I said, everybody's figured it out now. The blueprint's out. Just get a little physical with them. Hey, football, it's a physical game. And they're dead. The team has no heart, nothing in their guts. They are dogs. They lay down like dogs. Oh, my God, the Colts. I mean, Houston looked so bad last week. So, so, so bad. Their run defense was, like, so porous. Atlanta just ran right through them. I mean, for people who are Matt Ryan fans, they didn't get to see much of him last week because all he had to do was hand the ball off all week.
They were at 42-0.
So because of that, I see this as a very close game Thursday night because Houston looks like they completely suck. So it's going to be a real battle with the Colts.
Now, for some unbiased analysis, the game is in Houston. And Arian Foster should be back at full strength. And as Senior has pointed out on numerous occasions here on Evolution, the Colts don't stop the run very well. Because as bad as the Colts have looked, I mean, Houston looks like they might be like the worst team in the league. But I think having Foster back will help them, and the Colts will probably eke out another victory here. If Luck doesn't play, I think Houston wins.
Well, a Cowboys senior needs to tell it how he really feels. I'm not sure.
He's like you.
Yes.
He's really like you.
He's a little more fired up than me, I have to say.
All Cowboys senior can say is, I've got tunnel vision. I mean, I'm off site for football all the time. I love football. But I cannot wait until a week from Monday when those dogs get their butts handed to them by the Patriots.
That's right.
I just can't wait. The sky's going to be the limit. I mean, run the score up, Bill. I don't care how high you run it up. If you want to score 100, score 100. Embarrass those cowardly chicken shit bums.
Yeah.
I like the four-letter network. I think that's why we should create shirts, the four-letter network, and it's not place to be. It's not PTBN. The four-letter network, PTBN. Sunday, Let's dive into these quick. Chiefs host Chicago. That's a gimme. And I was chatting. We were chatting before we went on the air. If Kansas City loses this game, Andy Reid should be fired. I mean, this is an easy game. This is a setup game for them. The Bears, yeah, they got lucky at home. They won a 2-point game against, you know, I know we're all thinking that the Raiders are sexy and all, but they're still the Raiders. This is a game coming off a pretty tough loss to the Bengals on the road. This is a game Kansas City should win.
Kansas City, I think, is a lot better than their record. I mean, much more so. I mean, these are 2-1-3 teams, right? I think Kansas City's clearly the better team. I mean, Kansas City's lost to Cincinnati, Green Bay, and Denver.
Right? Yeah. And all relatively close games, not really blowouts per se. I mean,
Green Bay pretty much waxed them. But, yeah. And since, I mean, Kansas City should have won this game. I mean, they freaking couldn't put the ball in the end zone. They kicked 7 field goals. 7. Oh.
Cairo Santos.
Alex Smith threw for almost 400 yards. I mean, they moved the ball and just couldn't finish. So this should be a blowout, yeah. I think.
Great game in Cincinnati, and I am pushing my chips middle of the table. Bengals beat the Seahawks. And I couldn't tell you, I don't know if the Bengals even in the Kenny Anderson years, I don't know if the Bengals were 5-0. They're going to be 5-0, baby.
I agree, Scott.
Get the Dalton jerseys ready, baby.
I don't think they'll win because Dalton has a great game. Seattle's offensive line looks awful. And the game, Seattle's traditionally much worse on the road than they are in Seattle. I see the Bengals winning like kind of a 17-13 type of game. I don't think Seattle's offense is going to be able to get anything done in this game. What do you think, Senior?
Yeah, you got to like the Bengals. The one thing that scares me that, you know...
Is that they're the Bengals? Think,
no. I'm seeing it the other way. Is that, you know, everybody's hopping off the Seattle bandwagon. You know, it's early. It's really early. And I think they're one team that could still end up being there at the end of the season. You know, that they're not as bad as they've looked so far. They've gotten off to a sluggish start. They didn't have Chancellor. He just came back last week. Yeah, their offensive line is playing awful, and Wilson makes these incredible plays, running for his life and then making throws.
And this could be a game where you could easily see Andy Dalton lay out a stinker. It is entirely possible.
Now, you go back 1 year ago at this time, obviously it's easy for us to do as Patriot fans, and we were saying our offensive line's in shambles. We're never going to be a decent team unless we get it together. It seems hopeless, and the offensive line kind of came together. We were saying the same thing about the Steelers last year at this time, and that offensive line came together, and their offense became very good. I just get the feeling. I don't know if it's – I'm not saying it's this week. I'm just hesitant to throw in the towel on Seattle this early. So, yeah, I like Cincinnati in the game, but I'm guarded about it because I wouldn't be shocked to see all of a sudden see the real Seahawks show up because I just think they're too good to have been playing as bad as they have.
By no means am I saying they're cooked. I don't think they're cooked.
I don't think they're cooked either, but
I mean they started last year like this. I mean they were not very good for the first month of the season last year. I just think it's a really tough matchup and it's on the road. If the game was in Seattle, I would pick Seattle to win.
I think Seattle would win too. I think the Bengals are just lucky the way the schedule laid out.
The other thing that scares me is Cowboy picking the Bengals.
Yeah.
A couple of weeks ago, they were going to get buried, and it was going to be because of the guy that threw the 2 touchdown passes in the fourth quarter to win the game.
Yeah, I mean,
last week to talk about that.
He did also fumble and have it returned for a touchdown in the fourth quarter lose the game.
But he brought him back again. That was pretty gutsy.
He did. Andy Dalton is playing much better this year. I still think he'll turn into a pumpkin at one point or another before a nice red pumpkin. Nice.
You've been hanging out with JR too much. That's a problem.
If you really believe that, don't you think the Legion of Boom might be a crew that could do it to him?
I told you. I think the game will be 17-13. I said they would not win because of Dalton. That was my quote.
Okay, Cowboy.
All right.
It's like, I mean, if Dalton does the exact same thing that Matthew Stafford did this week,
I mean,
Matthew Stafford did exactly what he needed to win that game. After the game, did you say Matthew Stafford had a good game if they would have won 17?
One drive at the end of the game. No.
No, but it's the Bengals have a good pass rush. They have a good defense. and they're tough to run on. You're not going to. I don't think Seattle's going to be able to do much offensively. Lynch is a game time decision again, and Wilson's running around for his life back there. And I think the Cincinnati offense will do just enough. The Seattle defense is going to be on the field a lot. The Cincinnati offense will pound Hill. And, you know, not successfully at first, but as the game goes on, he'll do better. And they'll do just enough to squeak it out at the end. Hmm. Low scoring game.
It's a believable scenario. Okay.
Yeah, I think so, too. And a small part of us could see Andy Dalton throwing four picks and the Seahawks winning 12-0. Well, who knows? I don't think that's going to happen. I think the Bengals win, but it will be a close game. What won't be a close game, I think, Georgia Dome and Atlanta. I think the Falcons bury the Redskins. I think Atlanta's playing on a different level right now.
Not even worth talking about.
No, it's not. Neither is this scrimmage at Raymond James Stadium in Tampa, the Bucks and the Jags.
Jacksonville. I'm going to go on record. I like Jacksonville big in this game.
I disagree. I think
Road Warriors.
I think this will finally be the Jameis Winston game that Jameis Winston fans are waiting for.
I think that this game is going to be like 37-31 because both teams' defenses are so bad, and I just think Bortles outlasts him. It's gonna they'll each have like 3 or 4 touchdowns and like 3 or 4 interceptions.
Yeah, it's gonna be like playing Madden.
Bortles Winston shootout. Yeah, might be a fun game. Yeah,
absolutely.
This is an interesting game from the link. The Eagles host New Orleans. Saints won in overtime Sunday night on a botched overtime play. I won't even get into it. The Eagles have been fairly dreadful. But at home, on their turf, maybe. I could see the Eagles winning this game.
This is a really tough game to call, I think, because both teams have underachieved. And, I mean, if you watch the game Monday night, Breeze's numbers were good, but, I mean, he couldn't get the ball downfield really at all. Is he going to be healthy? He's traditionally on the road, not nearly the quarterback he is in New Orleans. But by the same token, Scott,
mm-hmm.
the Eagles, I mean, they're a mess.
They are a mess.
To give up a 15-play, 90-yard drive to Kirk freaking Cousins to lose the game is awful. So the one positive for the Eagles is they got their passing game working in the second half against Washington. Mm-hmm. I think that carries over a little bit. I mean, you saw what once they took the reins off of old Brandon and let him sling it a little. I mean, he carved through that defense like a hot knife through butter.
Yeah.
So I think Bradford could do some of the same. I like the Eagles, but I'm trepidatious about it. This is a game kind of like Cincy and Seattle, except the teams aren't very good.
Yes.
Where I would just go with the home team, and I think you got to go with the home team.
Yeah. We have new Browns versus old Browns, as the Cleveland will head to M&T to take on the Ravens. This is a must, I don't say must win, but this is a big opportunity for the Ravens to get a home win they desperately need. The Browns are still struggling to find some sort of identity. This is a win for the Ravens, I think. As ugly as this game might be, I think the Ravens win this one.
So, senior.
Yes.
So you would say last week was a must win for the Ravens. I mean, a big time must win, sitting at 0-3 in Pittsburgh. What did you think of their performance?
Very unimpressive again. I mean, what else can you say? You know, the Ravens don't look like the Ravens anymore. I don't really know what it is, but they're not the Ravens anymore. They were a team that struck a little fear in me. They don't anymore.
I think they got older, and I think they need to reassess. I mean, they got to rebuild the defense a little bit.
They've lost that character, you know. That's what the Ravens were, this hard-hitting gang of thugs, you know,
mm-hmm.
putting pressure on the quarterback, very, very aggressive all the time. And
I don't know if we have to call them a gang of thugs.
But it was a good rep, Raj. I mean, it's part of why they won.
Oh, God, that was great.
Cowboy Senior tells it like it is.
Yeah.
They were thugs, but hey, this is football. It's not such a bad thing to be thugs.
Nope.
And they were, and I think they really missed T-Sizzle. There's no doubt about that. He's a guy that personified that and brought that aggressive, thug, hard-hitting attitude. They're not getting after the quarterback anymore. I know they're secondary suspects, so they have to get after the quarterback, and they don't. I mean, this is a joke game anyway. They're playing Cleveland, so I honestly do see them winning at home. But this is what I think of this game. If there were two games, only two games on my television, this one or Jacksonville-Tampa Bay, I'd put on Jacksonville-Tampa Bay and I'd never change the channel, even during commercials. I mean, Cleveland and Baltimore right now, who wants to watch that pig of a game?
Really? Is this your, are we bringing back the tractor pull game of the week?
This is it. This is the game where if it's the only game on television and the only other channel you have has the tractor pull, you're watching the tractor pull.
Put on Rodeo. Let me tell you something. PBR, baby. Pro Bowl writing. That stuff is ratings.
I think Baltimore wins too, but I'm not sure. I mean, Steve Smith's not going to play. I mean, Flacco literally has nobody to throw to. Yeah, Kamar Aiken,
the guy with the heart on the team too. I mean,
Kamar Aiken's the one, right? And Cleveland can stack the box. Their cornerbacks. I mean, Hayden's good. I don't know. And McCown had a ridiculously good week last week. If you look, I mean, he had the best game of his career against San Diego, and they almost won that game. It wouldn't surprise me at all if Cleveland won this game. I'm going to pick the Ravens, but I think Cleveland very much has a puncher's chance in this game.
That would be it. We totally pronounce him dead.
Big win for the Rams last week. I don't see them going into Green Bay and beating the Packers, though. Packers didn't play that great this past week against the Niners, but I think they'll be fine at home. I think they beat St. Louis.
Green Bay is like New England at home.
Yeah,
almost unbeatable. Yeah. But for the Rams, we should talk a little bit about Todd Gurley and how good he is.
Oh, I love Todd Gurley.
I mean, well, you know, one of the things, I mean, he's coming back from the ACL. How long is it going to take? You were hearing they were just going to kind of work him in slow and maybe week 6 or 7. I mean, in the second half of that game, he looked like the best running back in the NFL. I mean, he looked like a Peterson, Le'Veon Bell clone. I mean, in Arizona's defense is no joke. It's no joke at all. He didn't do that against Jacksonville. I mean, if he runs, and you can run on Green Bay. I mean, I think Green Bay is going to win because I don't think that St. Louis can stop Rodgers. But I think Gurley has another big game, and I think he announces himself as top six, top seven running back in football, which gives St. Louis a legitimate chance to win that division.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, I agree.
This game's throwing me off a little bit. Buffalo goes into Tennessee to play the Titans. Buffalo coming off not a great performance against your team, Doctor. We'll talk about your team in a minute. I could see Buffalo laying an egg here. I don't know if they will, but they could. I don't know.
I see Buffalo being pissed off and I don't think anything of Tennessee. I see them just going in and mano a mano steamrolling Tennessee.
So it's more like welcome to the real NFL, senior. Marcus Mariota.
I think Buffalo's a better team than what they showed last week. Senior. I think, you know, teams have those one of those games. That was their one of those games.
You don't think it's going to affect – I mean, when you say mano a mano, I assume you say they're going to run the ball.
Booby Dixon.
I was going to say, I mean, Carlos Williams and McCoy are probably both not playing. I mean,
yeah, but Booby is a power back. That's what he is. So they won't –
Booby
maybe they
is
won't
a
get,
bum.
Maybe they won't get the big chunks. No, he's a power back. Cowboy, he's Booby – If Carlos doesn't play because of the concussion, Booby will have a good game. Cowboy, we could put Dr. G back there in the backfield in this game, and he'd run on Tennessee.
Yeah.
Tennessee's pigs.
Doctor and the Booby. Sounds like a sitcom.
I like Booby
and the Doctor.
I think Buffalo played poorly last week, and the Giants played really well. I don't mean to sound like I'm taking anything away from the Giants, but – I think teams have those one of those games sometimes, and I think that's what that was for Buffalo. I think Tennessee is legitimately just a bad team. I know Marcus Mariota's played pretty well. I don't see him having a good game against the Buffalo defense this week. Buffalo's going to be pissed off. I see them rolling over Tennessee on the road.
So here's my take on the game. I don't think Booby's going to be able to get a lot of work done. So if those guys don't play, which it really looks like both of those guys aren't going to play, I think both teams end up being one-dimensional because Tennessee is certainly not going to be able to run on Buffalo. So it's gonna be Tyrod Taylor against Tennessee's secondary versus Mariota against Buffalo's secondary. Buffalo's secondary, which has not been great this year. I like Mariota to win a pretty high-scoring game, kind of a 28-24. But
wow.
I think they get it done.
I love the disagreement. Just something else I'll be able to rub into you next
yeah,
week.
Yeah, you know what? I love you, Cowboy. I got to go with Senior on this one. I think Rex Ryan's gonna fire these guys up, and they're gonna go in and punch Mariota in the face.
But it's good that we disagree sometimes. That's the point of this. So
yeah, that's what it's all about.
I'm happy to be on this island, and if Booby Dixon rushes for more than 70 yards, I'm buying you dinner next week, Senior.
All right. I'll be
doctor.
I'll That's be thinking next, about a good restaurant.
That's the next podcast, Booby and the Doctor. these next three games, I don't think we should give the time of day. I think Arizona goes into Ford Field and beats the Lions. The Lions suck. They got a lot of problems. I don't know how Jim Schwartz still has a job. They're terrible.
Caldwell.
I want to say Jim Schwartz. I always want to say it's like the second time. I forgot Caldwell's a head
coach. That's all right. I mean, Schwartz was their last.
Schwartz might have been a better coach.
It's easy to confuse the two of them.
As bad a coach as Schwartz was, he had a pulse. Sometimes
yes.
I wonder if I want him to go check Caldwell with a mirror to see if he's bleeding on the sideline.
I think Arizona had a hiccup against the Rams, and it's better to have the hiccup now than in week 13 or whatever.
Also, divisional games, Scott. Those divisional games.
Yeah.
Teams are full familiar with each other. They're always tough.
Yep.
So I like Arizona, too. But, I mean, I think discounting Detroit. I mean, Detroit, for all intents and purposes, went into Seattle and won. If the ref blew the call, right? First and goal at the half-yard line with a minute and a half left. I mean, for all intents and purposes, they went into Seattle and won. Now they get Arizona at home. I mean, I like Arizona, too, but I think it'll be a close game.
I don't think so, but okay.
I think you guys discount the home field advantage in the end.
And it didn't.
I don't discount the home field advantage when the team at home is actually decent. And I've lost my faith in Matthew Stafford. And the Lion defense played well. I think Arizona will not. I think it'll be low scoring. But I think Arizona will have enough to win. I think Bruce Arians will pump those guys up after losing last week, and I think they'll win. I don't want to talk about this game in Dallas. I really don't.
Why not, Scott?
Oh, for God's sake, Senior. You really want to talk 12 minutes about this? Save your air for next week, because I want to kick dirt on the Colts, too.
I don't think we should just skip over it, Scott.
This could be your fighting chance, Scott, is that the Pats are looking past this game because all they're thinking about is kicking the shit out of the Colts.
The doctor was trying to get this game into my head today.
They've been dreaming about this game against the Colts.
Right, G? You were trying to do this to me today. I shouldn't discount. I will say this.
I don't consider the Cowboys a walkover. I'll say this. Cowboys.
I will say this. If the defense can hang, if it's two touchdowns or less at halftime, I think the Cowboys have a shot. But if it's 21-0 at the end of the first quarter, this game's over.
I think the Cowboys' path to victory. I don't think they can win this game, barring some kind of injury. But I think their path to victory is the same as it's been. Is you want to keep the Pats' offense off the field, you got to run the ball. You got to run the ball, and I mean, I don't know why they took Joseph Randle out of the game. It was like I mean, it was. They were pissed off at him about the fumble that wasn't a fumble, and they like didn't play him the rest of the game. McFadden, you could see his corpse rotting on the field.
I agree, man. Watching him run is like death. It really is.
He's old. He's old.
Like
Randall,
running at
Randall's
half speed.
Good.
All those years of not having an offensive line in Oakland and just having Denver and San Diego defenses just beat the shit out of him the last like 4 or 5 years. He has nothing. He doesn't hit the hole. He's got
Randall.
Enough.
Randall's a good player. I mean,
I love Randall.
He is a knucklehead. You can tell he's a knucklehead. I mean,
he is.
He's. You know, I think he talked his way onto the bench after that fumble because they showed him on the sidelines. He's telling the coach, "I told you so," and you know. But with the margin for error for them being so small with all the injuries, they can't bench like their best playmaker. You can't do that, you know? So, I mean, their path to victory this week is they keep the Pats offense off the field with 8-9 minute drives, keep it close, and hope to win it at the end. And, you know, Whedon showed last week that he is capable of leading a game win, a game winning, game tying drive. And it's almost the old Ravens offense that they have to run, which is run, deep shot, run, deep shot. And Garrett can't be stubborn and throw one of the two or three guys on the offensive side of the ball who can actually do something onto the bench. The kid, it's not like he was reaching over the goal line trying to score a touchdown. The kid's trying to make a play, you know. It's not
right.
He doesn't have the yips like Tiki Barber did back in the day, where he would just get the handoff and just fumble right away. You know, sorry, George. He corrected.
But when you're running a play right into the middle of the line at the goal line, it's probably not very advisable to reach forward up in the air with one hand on the ball. It's probably not something you teach.
Obviously, but I mean, they're going to have a lot of problems stopping the Pats. What do you think, Senior? You know, you never know. The Patriots' game plan varies so much from week to week, and I think, and this is, I'm not trying to be a jerk, Scott, but I think they could have equal success whether they decide to go with that give the ball to LeGarrette Blount 30 times game plan or the let Brady throw it 50 times game plan. Which one do you see?
I think they're going to air it out. And in all honesty, I'm being nice and saying I respect the Cowboys because I do, because they're the Cowboys, and you know, you always have to respect the Cowboys. But if you ask me to say what I think, I'll say the Patriots by 3 touchdowns and Tommy passes for about 400 yards on their secondary. And you know, most people around here are saying worse than that. I'm hearing stuff like 45-13 and stuff, ridiculous stuff. So I'm going to cut it down and be conservative and say Pats by 3 touchdowns.
The Cowboys offense, I agree the Patriots should win the game by double digits, but the Cowboys offense should be able to get some work done in this one, Scott. The Pats
defense, they should score some points. I agree with that.
45-13.
I've heard numbers worse than that.
But. Bitches. we'll see. We'll see. I think the Broncos go into Oakland and beat the Raiders.
Easy.
I think that's easy. All right, Doctor.
There we go.
This is a big game for the Giants. It'd be 3-2 after you were ready to, you know, dunk your head in the bucket of apples at Thanksgiving at Halloween. You could be 3-2
if you lose this one, George. Grab the apples.
they roll at home over this joke.
It's a game they should win, but you know how the NFL is. Like a few weeks ago, we thought the Jets were going to kill the Eagles. And look at what happened.
Yeah, but the Eagles.
Know, but the Giants should win this game.
The Niners are a mess.
They should feel good about themselves.
The Niners are a mess.
Two words. Colin Kaepernick.
I mean, I thought once Cruz was out last week, I'm like, we're going to get crushed by the Bills. You know, everybody was like, oh, this is don't even watch the game, basically. And so they played a good game. They won. I agree with Cowboy Senior. You're not totally putting down the Giants. I think, you know, Buffalo had an off week and the Giants took advantage of it.
The Giants should win this game.
You know, again,
when you look at the Giants
season, this is a game that
so
if they
far,
can go in there and win that, they could possibly be in first place.
Yeah. Well,
they can win that division. I mean, when you look at the Giants season so far, really, the two losses, you can't say they played awful.
They should have won both games.
Yeah, they just mismanaged. They just mismanaged the end of the games. I mean,
they should.
And it'll be too bad if they don't make the playoffs and those games bite them in the ass. That would be too bad. But really, with the look of, and no offense, Scott, because it's
they could be 5-0 right now.
They should have lost that game. They should have
with the Cowboys, but
they should have lost that game.
The look of the NFC East right now, it's there for the taking for the Giants. I mean, really, if you have to pick a favorite right now, especially if you depending on how long it's going to be for Romo and Dez to come back, kind of the Giants look like the best team in the division.
Clearly. They're the only team in the division that really has shown a pulse. I mean, Washington's a fraudulent 2-2.
And the Eagles are a complete joke. And I know Dallas is a good team, but let's face it. You know, any team loses two guys that are that, and one of them's your quarterback. Two guys, your two best, the two best offensive players you have by far, two stars. Now you're not going to be. It's hard to be a good team.
Let's put it this way: if the Cowboys can tread water for the next, you know, 3 weeks, Dez
gotta,
is back by then.
Yeah,
he's not coming back week seven. That's wrong. I'm telling you. I would expect him back like week 12.
And they need Romo too. Even more than Dez, they need Romo.
Stupid collarbone.
Yeah, they need Romo more than Dez. I agree.
Yeah. But I think he's giant. And then Monday night, out at Qualcomm, Steelers with Michael Vick in San Diego. I got to like the Chargers here. Steelers secondary. The Steelers defense has been, you know, I mean, they look good against the Rams. But I think Philip Rivers kind of shreds this defense a little bit, I think.
The Steelers defense played good against Baltimore. I mean, I don't think this defense played bad. The guy missed a couple field goals. I mean, that's why they lost the game. This is a tough game to pick, but I picked the Steelers, and I'm basing that on what Josh McCown did to the San Diego defense last week. The San Diego defense is sneaky terrible, and Vic isn't going to be able to get anything done against good defenses, but I think he has a good game in this one. I think the Steelers will do whatever they want. I expect this to be very high scoring. 31-27 Pittsburgh.
Yeah, wow. I see. You know, from Vic's point of view, it's a simple formula against a bad defensive team. Just put the ball in Bell's hands. Somehow get the ball into Brown's hands, even if it's underneath stuff, and let him run with it after the catch. And they're going to score a lot of points. But I agree. I do see San Diego scoring some points in this game too.
And
I mean, Pittsburgh's defense, to say they played a good game against Baltimore last week. Well, I agree. But you know what? A lot of defenses are going to play good games against Baltimore with the way that offense is looking. So, especially once Senior goes down, the whole character of the offense is gone. So, yeah, I see this game being high scoring, really.
And
it could go either way. You hold a gun to my head, I'll take Pittsburgh just because they got those two playmakers. I mean,
three.
Those two guys,
well, Martavis Bryant is back.
He's coming back to. Well, I don't put him at the same level as.
Of course Brown, not, but he's. I mean, he's a.
But it's another threat. Yeah, it adds another threat. He's a speed threat. I mean, he's gonna miss Ben a lot because Martavis Bryant's biggest threat is the deep ball, and I don't know if Vic can throw it.
Vic threw a pretty nice deep ball over to Antonio Brown that he dropped in the end zone.
Yeah, that was a good throw. That was a good.
Vic's better throwing the ball downfield. It's the short stuff where his inaccuracy really shines
through. He also still pulls it down and decides to run way too often. You know, they gotta try and snap him out of that.
I'm the only one who likes the Chargers.
We didn't hear from the doctor.
I said I think they have a chance. Okay. I think it's a high-scoring game. I said if you hold a gun to my head, I would have to pick Pittsburgh, but it's almost a flip-a-coin game, and yeah, there's going to be a lot of points scored.
What do you think, Dr. G? You like the Chargers at home?
Well, I agree with you guys in terms of it's going to be a high-scoring game, no doubt about it. But I think, Scott, you're going to be alone. I think I'm going to go with Pittsburgh on this one. I think they're going to pull this one out. I think they're definitely, you know, a few more weapons and... I agree with Cowboy saying that it's like the San Diego defense is sneaky bad. I like that term.
Okay,
I'm gonna steal that from you.
Anytime, you know. No copyright on that, Doctor.
Booby and the Doctor. All right, gentlemen.
We'll copyright that.
Another greatest show ever in the books. We'll be back next week. We will cover week 6. The Cowboys are actually off next week, which is much needed bye. Of course, postseason division series will be knee deep in them. A couple of them may be over. Who knows? And, you know, what we didn't talk about is hockey started tonight as the Chicago Blackhawks unfurled their Stanley Cup championship banner. So the NHL season started in earnest tonight. NBA probably another month away. So, but plenty of sports, as always. You can only hear the best here. So, for the Doctor, for Cowboy, for Senior, for Joel Barnhart, I'm Scott. Sports is all around, but if you stay with us, it won't pass you by. Good week.